At the beginning of Advent, right at the beginning, it was the first Sunday of December, we talked that morning about how people can stretch Christmas out sort of before the date, how it can be stretched out for weeks or even months. And you may be thinking that we're stretching Christmas out now with the songs we're singing and talking about the visit of the Magi, the visit of the wise men. But we took our time getting to the manger, and we're taking our time lingering as well, if not at the manger, then with the infant Jesus. As Helen said, this is Epiphany. And I found that if you ask people the question, do you leave your tree up until Epiphany, you're usually going to get one of three answers: yes, no, or what is Epiphany? And Epiphany is the end of the 12 days of Christmas. The 12 days of Christmas ended yesterday. And Epiphany means a revealing. Revealing. And in the song, of course, the 12 days of Christmas, we sing about what my true love gave to me. And in our story this morning, we're talking about gifts. We're talking about gifts that are given. And we're talking about people who prostrated themselves in homage, who got down on their faces before an infant, an otherwise normal-seeming infant. And we're talking about something that has been revealed, friends. And the thing that has been revealed is everything has changed. Everything has changed. You hear people talk sometimes about keeping the Christmas spirit going year round. I sound very loud to myself. Am I? Is it okay? Betty, it's good? Okay. You hear people talk about keeping the Christmas spirit going year round, don't you? And I ask the question, I pose this question to us all. What would it be like for us to be finding Christ year round? For us to be getting down in front of Christ year round and paying him homage. What would it mean to come away from Advent, this season that we've just come away from, that we're coming away from, and Christmas Eve, and all the things that happened around this church, and all the things that we've been looking at over these weeks, and all the things that we've been sitting with, and for nothing to be the same. For nothing to be the same. And if you know me at all, I should say if you know me fairly well, you know that I derive a great deal of pleasure from an amusement out of what one might deem small things or seemingly mundane things. I do. And in the church calendar, the time between Advent and Lent Pentecost, and then the time between Lent Pentecost and the following Advent, are called ordinary time. They call this ordinary time. Interesting? And I have a pie chart, because who doesn't like a good pie chart on Epiphany? And I put this up here because the church calendar is not traditionally a very Baptist type of thing. It's a church tradition for sure. But note that there are sort of two big seasons, and the first is up at the top, Advent and Christmastide, which is the word for the 12 days of Christmas. And then we have this green, and this is why, by the way, these things are green. We have this green time, which is called ordinary time. And it's funny, I always thought, you know, imagine calling time ordinary. But I did find out recently, and numbers are not really my number one thing. I can deal with numbers. But the time is called ordinary because the Sundays are marked by ordinal numbers. So you'll see next week that we'll put in our folder, we'll put first Sunday after Epiphany, and then second Sunday after Epiphany. This is interesting, no? Yeah. Third Sunday until we get to Ash Wednesday, and then we'll say first Sunday of Lent. So that's how that will go. And then once Lent is over, or once Easter is over, and we come to the day of Pentecost and Trinity Sunday, we'll come to ordinary time again, and we'll start saying first Sunday after Pentecost, second Sunday after Pentecost. And that goes through all summer until we get to November. And by that time, we're in the 20s. And I'm looking at the church bulletin, and I'm going, like, 20 Sundays after Pentecost. When is the next thing coming? And we look forward to it. So you can take a note of this in your church calendars. So why am I talking about all this church calendar stuff? Well, it's significant, you see, because with the coming of Christ, everything has changed. The way we view the world changes, including the way we view time. There has been a reordering of things. And we're not looking at time even as followers of Christ. We're not counting time primarily by the calendar year. We're not counting time by the fiscal year or by the academic year or by all the different ways that we count time. Because everything has changed. And something momentous has happened. Something momentous to the point where it's noticeable in the stars even. And we call the Magi wise men. We sing of them as kings, these Magi. And later use of the word in the Bible, it denotes magicians. But it's generally thought that these men were astrologers from Babylon. This is the general thinking on who the Magi were. So they were astrologers. They looked for signs. They looked for signs and portents in the sky that would show that something had changed. And there was a lot of that thing going on in that day and age, looking for signs and portents in the sky. The sun and the moon and the stars continued on their courses, and they made things orderly. And when something happened that was out of the ordinary, it was notable. So this is what happened for these Magi. A light has appeared. A light appeared. And there are people who will say things like, who will conjecture that maybe the star or this light was Halley's Comet. There are people who will conjecture that maybe it was like a confluence of stars, and you can conject all you like if that's your thing. But the point here in our story is that the order of things has been shaken up. Something new has happened. And because of this, it's no longer simply about an endless cycle of seasons. It's no longer simply about an endless cycle of wake up, go through your day, or maybe get through your day, as the case may be, and go to sleep again, and repeat, and same stuff, different day. It's no longer simply an endless cycle of you're born, you live, you die. New meaning has come into the world. Nothing would ever be the same. And as we start this new year, friends, and as we come away from Advent, and as we prepare to go through these weeks of so-called ordinary time, wouldn't we want to be engaged in finding out what this new thing is all about? Wouldn't we want to do that? Maybe in a new way, to have a chance to commit ourselves, maybe for the first time, or maybe to recommit ourselves to this King that we follow, and to have a chance to get down on our faces before Him like these Magi, to follow the example of these Magi, Tradition says that there were three, and we sang about three of them, and church tradition named them, but we really don't know how many there were. We don't know what their names were, but we know that they were part of a group. They were part of a caravan, and it was large enough to attract attention when it arrived in Jerusalem. This group of people was large enough to attract attention. This caravan arrived in Jerusalem at the time of King Herod, who was a half-Jewish, half-Idumean client king. He was installed by the Romans. He was known as Herod the Great for all the things that he built. He was a man who actually once sold off part of his own personal wealth to help with famine relief, because people are very rarely all good or all bad. He was a man who was insanely jealous of people who might take over his throne, and a man who sought to hold on to power, to cling to power at no matter the cost. And as we read our story today, the coming of Christ has shaken things up. The coming of Christ has shaken things. He's changed the natural order of things, and it's troubling for Herod. We read, it troubles him. It's troubling for all of Jerusalem. What might this mean? Political instability, violence, economic instability. And so the question for us becomes this morning, friends, where do we look for our stability? To whom do we look for our stability? And we have three reactions in this story. The first is from Herod. For Herod, this new thing has come about and it must be stamped out. It must be stamped out. It must be done away with. The second is from the chief priests and scribes. And they had the good information, which they gave. They said, it's Bethlehem that the king is to be born. It's in the town of Bethlehem. But they don't go looking for Jesus. They don't go joining the Magi. They don't go joining them as they follow the light. They're evidently happy. They're happy with their traditions. They don't want things to be shaken up. And this is the underlying question of the story, friends, as we consider these reactions. To whom do we look for salvation? Where do we look to be saved? Where do we look to be delivered? And how do we feel about things getting shaken up? And the third reaction, of course, we see in the Magi. We see in these wise men, and they followed the light. The Magi followed the light. And as we consider this, we can't help but think of the people of Israel. We can't help but think of the people of ancient Israel who also followed a light, who followed a pillar of fire by night. And they were traveling together. They were seeking something better. And this should be reminding you of something else, of course. And this is us. It's the church. We're traveling together. We're walking in the light and walking by the light. This is our prayer. This is what we were singing about. And we're doing this together. And we are looking forward to something better, aren't we? There was an expectation in Jesus' day that better things were ahead. And there were a lot of claims going on about what would bring better days. The emperor was known as the savior of the world. The emperor had brought better days and would bring better days. So what will bring better days? Economic power, political power, influence, money. Or maybe it's best if we don't set out at all. Maybe it's best if we just stay at home and we numb ourselves in the various ways that we numb ourselves and never set out in the first place. And in the midst of this, we have the Magi, and they're following this light that's going to lead them to Jesus. The light from this star shone on a group of people to whom you might not expect Jesus to be revealed. A group of pagan astrologers from Babylon are the people on whom this light shines. And they needed outside help, of course. They needed outside help. They needed assistance from the chief priests and scribes. They needed a little scribal assist. They needed direction. They needed guidance. They needed this light that was going before them that announced that something new had happened and would happen in the person of this little child. And so they're going along following this light. And then we come to this line in verse 10. And I like this line a lot. When they saw that the star had stopped. Stop here, the star says. Just stop. Isn't it good to stop? Don't we need to be stopping? This is what we've been talking about these past 5 weeks. Taking time to stop and asking God to illuminate things. Asking God to illuminate things for us so that we see the same way that God sees. This is not something we could ever do on our own. This is something we ask God to do for us, and we stop. And then we read this. Same verse. When they stopped, look what happened. They were overwhelmed with joy. Isn't this what we want? This is what we want. We talk about being overwhelmed. A friend of mine said not too long ago that, you know, something like it was only 3 days into the new year and he was already feeling overwhelmed. We know all about this. We talk about feeling overwhelmed. Usually it's not a good thing to be overwhelmed. But it's my prayer this morning, friends, that as we spend time with this story and spend time coming before God this morning, and as we go from this place when we're done, that we would be overwhelmed by nothing but joy. That we would be overwhelmed by joy because everything has changed. With the coming of this little baby whose birth we just celebrated, everything has changed and nothing will ever be the same. They were overwhelmed by joy and they saw the child with his mother. And you can picture this. We can just picture this. There's nothing unusual going on here in our story to the untrained eye. There's nothing unusual. Some astrologers meet up with a young child. It's thought that Jesus might have been around 2 or 3 here at the time of this story. And you can picture it. And he's not here this morning, but those of you who know little Ethan can picture little Ethan. Coming out. He's a little 3-year-old. A little toddler. Little Jesus comes toddling out. And his mother's looking on. Wondering, no doubt, what's going on. And this little toddler comes out. And what do these men do? They get down on their faces. Our NRSV Bibles have the word knelt here. But the word, it can signify a descending, like a descending from on high and getting down on your face. getting down prostrate with your head on the ground. This is what they're doing before Jesus. Do you ever do that? Get down with your head on the ground. I always feel I should do more of that. This is how they greet Jesus. This is the beginning of wisdom. They present gifts fit for a king. We sang about them. Gold, because he's a king. Frankincense, which was used in the temple. Frankincense was burned by priests, our great high priest. And myrrh, which is used to anoint a body at death. They get down on their faces and they offer gifts. And what an example for us. What an example for us from these magi who might have been deemed least likely to provide a good example. Magi who came from a place that was far outside the land of promise. Magi who came from a people who were far outside the people of promise. They got down on their faces and they worshiped Jesus. Do you ever feel that about yourself? Maybe you don't. Do you ever think, how could God use me? How could God use me in his grand salvation plan? How could such a thing be? If you ever do ask that, it's okay. It's normal. I ask it too. How could God use me, we say, to point to Jesus? How could God use me to shine his light through? And the answer to this question, friends, starts with us getting down on our faces before Jesus and paying him homage. We're going to be talking over the next weeks about how we do that. Practically, we're going to be looking at Jesus' words in the Sermon on the Mount. And we're going to be asking the question, what does it mean to take Jesus' words seriously? And we're going to be spending time with Jesus. This is how we're going to spend ordinary time. And God grant that there will be nothing ordinary about it for us. We'll find Jesus in the most unlikely places. We're only able to find him because he's made himself known, because he has found us. And I say, may God give us the will, friends, as we go into this new year, to hold on to that for which Christ has taken hold of us. And we do this together as we travel along in our own Blythewood caravan and all the different caravans of which we're a part. In the middle of our trip, friends, Christ makes himself known. There's nothing unusual going on here to the untrained eye. There's nothing unusual going on here when we gather around this table. To the untrained eye, and we eat small pieces of bread, and we drink grape juice out of small cups. Yet it's around this table, it's around a table, that Christ makes himself known, isn't it? With eyes of faith, the table becomes the place at which we're invited to stop and meet Christ. The table becomes the place where we're invited to stop and meet Christ, the same way those magi did, and figuratively at least, get down on our faces before him. With joy, as we recognize our King and our priest and our sacrifice. This is what we're going to be doing in a few moments. To get down on our faces and to offer ourselves. What a way to start the new year. Happy New Year and a blessed new year to each and every one. Amen.